City Limits is a production of WAER, Syracuse Public Media, and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, National Grid, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016.
At its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
Welcome to City Limits. I'm Katie Zolkowski. No James Market closing on Syracuse's Near West Side renewed a conversation about food access in some of the city's most impoverished neighborhoods. Local officials and nonprofit leaders worried the closure would severely affect the lives of those who lived around it. But in research published by Syracuse University's master's student Katie Mott, people living in extreme poverty said they didn't view the closure of No James as their most pressing concern. I sat down and talked with Mott about her research. How did you come up with the idea for this research?
Yeah, so this is part of my broader thesis research. Okay. Paul No James, who formerly owned No James Brothers Supermarket in the Near West Side, announced that No James was closing. And so in the last week of No James operating, I went down and talked with customers to get an idea of where they were planning to shop next, why they shopped at No James, how long they had shopped there, and then their sort of understanding of No James closing. With that customer survey data, I then decided to interview members of nonprofit organizations, elected officials, all people who had been working either in the Near West Side or with Paul to better understand their perceptions of No James closing and where to go from here, really.
Your major findings is that food wasn't their biggest concern when it closed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so after I was interviewing a lot of nonprofit members and elected officials, I really wanted to still gain a deeper perspective from people living in the Near West Side. And so in talking to people, I initially came in with the question of, how did the closure of No James affect you? And really be able to build this case that the closure of No James is this really unfortunate situation, which I'm not saying that it isn't. But what people had to say was that that's really sad, that really sucks that No James closed. But then they'd go on to talk about that they didn't have a place to sleep at night and that they were still waiting to be put on the public housing waiting list. They still hadn't received their Social Security disability benefits. And so these bigger, more pressing problems in their lives were far more important to them than the loss of a grocery store.
Was that the most surprising thing you found?
Right, yeah. The people that I was speaking to were not necessarily regular customers at No James, but I took for granted that they were and assumed that they were, and that everybody in the Near West Side had this like deep tie to No James. But yeah, that was definitely the most surprising finding for me at the time, was that people didn't want to talk about No James. They wanted to tell me about these big issues. So I think my story of Denise that I explain a little bit in this research brief of her kind of repeatedly applying for Social Security disability was probably one of the most surprising and disturbing stories for me.
Can you talk about Denise a little
bit
more?
So yeah, so Denise, she's a senior citizen, but she's still, she's not old enough to receive Social Security as we know it. And so she's worked her entire life, and she moved from the South to come to Syracuse to help out with child support for her family. And so in doing so, she's injured her foot, and she also has some mental health issues. And so with that, her doctor has deemed that she shouldn't have to work. And this isn't a matter of, you know, that she doesn't want to, but she physically can't. And so she's been trying to apply for disability and has been unsuccessful in 3 attempts. I believe she's on her 3rd attempt now.
Wow.
And so having a doctor say, you know, you qualify, and she had gone to job fairs, and they said, well, no, you should apply for Social Security disability. And then seeing the flip side of this, constant having to reapply and wait and depend on charity and emergency food systems, and she barely has any income whatsoever, that one that stuck with me.
What happens if you even have that physical point of access. How is food still a barrier for people in poverty?
It's hard to suggest that, and I think a lot of what the public health realm is suggesting is that people need to take the time to cook and know what the healthier options are and really make the best choices for their family. But the reality is that people don't have the time, and that a lot of it isn't, I don't believe, rooted in education. I think it's rooted in the fact that they're juggling so much more, and they're people that are living in poverty are jumping through so many more hoops than someone like me. And I can go and eat at a fast food restaurant and I don't get the same criticism or backlash that someone living in poverty would.
I noticed that in your brief, you talk about the need for a comprehensive approach to access as a whole, not just looking at food access or housing access. What is holding people back from looking at things more comprehensively?
I mean, it's just more difficult, and people are stretched thin, and I'm not trying to ignore that or discredit people that are doing great work in this city. But I think one thing that's driving a lot of my research is trying to sort of counter the food desert narrative that the absence or presence of a grocery store is a major determinant on whether you have access to food. And so with No James closing, people no longer have that physical access to a grocery store, but that doesn't decrease or increase the money in their pockets. And so if we can look more broadly at issues of housing and issues of job security and the types of jobs that we're trying to create and the barriers to employment, those could still tie eventually back into food.
What could be a more long-term solution from talking to these people? Like, what do they say that they need?
I think that a lot of it's rooted in the social safety net and advocating for a better social welfare system. Really, it comes down to these sort of entitlements that people have. And if they had access to these like broader and more comprehensive social safety net, then they would be able to have a better opportunity to, you know, support themselves.
You've been in Syracuse, you said, for about going on your eighth year. You did your undergrad at ESF, and now you're in a master's program with Falk and Maxwell. How does your experience living in Syracuse and your interactions with the Syracuse community frame some of the research that you've done?
I think having spent time in the white-collar engineering consulting world and then also spending time working in the food service in Syracuse and now as a grad student in the social sciences, it's provided a really interesting array of experiences for me and perspectives to see Syracuse through, and understanding how people that are sort of the professionals, how they view problems in Syracuse versus how academics are viewing problems in Syracuse versus the residents in the Near West Side has really made me even more passionate about further highlighting the true problems that people face that are living in poverty.
Katie Mott's full research brief is available at waer.org. For City Limits, I'm Katie Zolkowski.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Find more from this series at citylimitsproject.org and subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes.